Thank you very much, and thank you for coming here on a really beautiful day. It's really unfortunate that we don't have any windows here. My name is Michael Chaitin. I'm with my research focus is tobacco, but I'm also at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, and I lead a small project looking at population-level factors associated with mental health and addictions. I have no commercial interest to disclose. However, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors from the University of Montreal, McGill University, and the Canadian Cancer Society, who provided funding for the underlying cohort study for this paper. As we know, depression disorders has an enormous public health burden. It's expected to be second only to heart disease in terms of the global burden of disease. And we know as well that adolescence is a time which we see a dramatic increase in the prevalence of depression disorders. Estimates range up to 2.5% in children, and then up to 9% in adolescents, nearly a fourfold increase. On top of this burden, we also see estimates of subthreshold depression, that is non-clinically significant symptoms, but which may be important nonetheless, and estimates range there up until 18%. And that burden extends up into adulthood. So it's important to understand how depression symptoms change during this important period, what the trajectories of change, what the patterns might be. One option to do this is to use a mean trajectory approach. This is to average out all the pathways and all the different changes that happen during this course of adolescence over time. But what that approach might do is wash out the heterogeneity that truly exists. We may be interested in whether or not there are certain types, that there are actually classes of and patterns that are that we can identify as unique. We know that everyone has their own individual trajectory through adolescence, and everyone's pathways and patterns are different. The question is whether or not we can identify qualitatively these subgroups. My analogy here is with color. If we just average out the approach, we just see the white in the center of the screen. But we might actually, if we unpack it, see these different colors that emerge as distinct and important to groups to focus on their own. Another important factor to understand about development during adolescence is the differences that may emerge between boys and girls. During childhood, there are very little differences in terms of depressive disorders and depressive symptoms. But these during adolescence and later, these differences emerge and become very strong by the end of adolescence and into young adulthood. And understanding how these patterns develop is very important. To answer these questions, we turn to the nicotine dependence in teens cohort. It's a study that was designed specifically to understand developmental trajectories in adolescents. It's based in Montreal, Canada. It took a cohort of a relatively large number of people, about 1,300 kids in grade 7, so about the ages of 12, followed them up relatively frequently, about every 3 months, for a relatively long period of time, so about for 5 years, and with continuing follow-up in young adulthood, and which is actually still ongoing right now. This takes the first young adulthood follow-up wave, which was about the average age of 21. To assess depression, use the six-item scale that's been used in a number of large epidemiological surveys. And in young adulthood, use the major depression inventory, which provides DSM criteria symptoms. At young adulthood, also looked at a number of other self-assessed mental health reports, including about their own mental health, stress, whether or not they'd sought care, had received a diagnosis of major depression or anxiety, and whether or not they were taking antidepressants. To identify the trajectories, that is, to identify if there is only one group or one pathway through adolescence, or whether or not there may be distinct, qualitatively different subgroups, used semi-parametric group-based latent class group modeling, which is the procedure PROC-TRASH in SAS. Because of the relatively large sample size and the number of measures per person, we were concerned about replicability and repeatability in other samples. And so we used a relatively conservative model selection process. For reference, here's what we would have found had we just done a mean trajectory approach. And I guess I should stop here. So we're not we didn't put this in my introduction, but there are a number of other people who have been doing other latent class modeling with depression. But we're also following on that literature as well. You can talk about that later. But for doing a single trajectory approach, we see with girls a relatively high trajectory, and that increases during the course of adolescence. And for boys, a single trajectory shows that boys are, on average, their depression symptoms are significantly lower. It's hard to see on the scale a little bit, but it is a quite significant difference. Follow a slight U-shaped pattern, which has also been described in some literature, showing an actual decrease up into the age of about 14 or 15, and then a slight increase after that. However, after the modeling process, we came for boys with three trajectories. We had maybe hoped to find more, but this is what our modeling process came to. And we found one that is close to a high group, a moderate group, and a low group. And we see differences as well in the shapes of these curves, that the high group shows an increase over time, for boys, but at a rate that slows over time. So there's a quadratic function here that you see an increase, but it levels out as the adolescents get older. For the moderate group, you see a small linear increase over time, but no quadratic function. And for the low group, you see the curve that most closely approximate the single trajectory solution. So this is a decrease over time, but the rate of decrease accelerates. So this is what creates the slight U curve. But that shows that that unlike our stereotypes of adolescence, that it actually can be a time where you're for some people, where your symptoms of depression actually get lower on average. Now, most boys, in fact, fell into this low trajectory group, and about 50% of boys had this pattern of depression symptoms over time. And while 14% of boys, a relatively low number, met the high trajectory group, and 38% in the middle. For girls, we actually found, after the modeling, a relatively similar, both quantitatively and qualitatively, set of trajectory groups. So we also found three. We saw a high group with an increase over time that slowed, and a linear increase in the moderate group, and then this U-shaped decrease among in the low trajectory group. Both the initial parameters and the shape matched quite well to the boys, at least on a qualitative level. The big difference, however, here was in the percentage of boys versus girls who were in each group. So the shapes of the curves didn't differ, the pathways, and what the tracks looked like. It was just the numbers of people who followed those pathways was substantially different. Instead of 14% in the high trajectory group, there were 29%. And instead of half of adolescents in the low group, it was only 28%. So it was not the pathways that seemed different, at least during this course, the snapshot of adolescence that we took. It seemed to be already existing patterns. Then we then looked to see if these trajectories were predictive of outcomes in young adulthood. And we found, in fact, that they were. You can see this is just prevalence of responses, of yes responses to each of these categories of stress, mental health, diagnosed mood, diagnosed anxiety, help seeking, and antidepressant use. And we see, particularly for stress and for some, that there, all of these are significantly associated with trajectory group. The thing is with these associations that is this very surprising? No, it's not. That it's good that we found that depression symptoms predict depression in young adulthood. What we then went on to do, though, is to say, are these trajectories, do they provide more information than a single item measure and other predictors of depression in young adulthood? And we found for some of these outcomes they in fact did. So we controlled for baseline depression in a subsequent analysis. We also looked at the last time period, so the most recent, and that had the same effect, as well as mother's level of education and immigrant status, which is a strong predictor of depression symptoms, particularly in Canada. Race is not as an important factor, but immigrant status is. And we did find that the effects were attenuated somewhat, but we still did find effects of the trajectories over and above this single item of a point estimate of depression. For major depression, inventory symptoms, stress, and self-rated mental health. For boys, we saw much the same picture, that we see these trajectory groups are in adolescence are strongly indicative of mental health outcomes in young adulthood, from stress to antidepressant use and help-seeking and diagnosed disorders. And after adjustment, the similar list of items remains there. The one thing to note is that this is probably over-adjusting this analysis here when you're putting in a baseline depression plus the depression symptoms. You're controlling twice for the same thing. So it's not surprising you're not going to find the same effect, but it's more to get a sense of above and beyond that baseline measure. However, our next step was, because we saw these very similar relationships between boys and girls, and the very similar trajectories, we're like, are these predicting the same things? Is being in this top trajectory, does it predict in the same way, or is the effect different for boys and for girls? And for most of the list of our outcomes, it was. With two exceptions that are here. The first was help-seeking, and the second was antidepressant use. For help-seeking, what's very interesting is that among those 14% of boys who are in the high trajectory group here, that over 25% of them had sought psychiatric or psychological care, which is a substantial number. But for girls who, in that same trajectory, who had that same pattern of symptoms over time, less than 15% had. And that suggests that either boys are being identified, or that the level of symptoms perhaps may be seen as more clinically significant than it would perhaps in girls. There are a number of potential explanations here, but we see a very different pattern of help seeking for the same patterns of depression symptoms. For antidepressant use, what we find is for boys, what's really driving this relationship is that no one in the low group, that 50%, was taking antidepressants. But for girls, you did have a small but existing number of people who were, which may also reflect that maybe perhaps it's being more effective among girls than boys, and you perhaps that might be it might have been the implication, but it also may be indicative of some slight overprescription. There are a number of limitations here. This is not a clinical measure of depression, but it's also not this is very much a population-based study, that these are this is healthy patterns generally of depression symptoms, and we looked for clinically significant depression at follow-up, and there weren't really enough people to do any analyses with an actual diagnosis of depression. There may be potential practice effects as people do the survey 20 times, so some of the changes maybe just be due to habituation. And there was some loss to follow-up. It was fairly good for this kind of study, and it wasn't associated with depression, but it could have been introduce some bias. So the key points, we did see heterogeneity in these trajectories. And that, but the differences, a prevalence difference between boys and girls existed prior to the beginning, the age 12. And so, and we didn't see any differences in the patterns during this point of adolescence. The trajectories were similar between boys and girls. And there may be some suggestion of overdiagnosis or overtreatment or underdiagnosis, perhaps, of girls who are seen as who have a certain level of symptoms. And finally, that this is a healthy population, but these subclinical levels can have important health and mental health implications. So, thank you. For more information, you can go to my website, Population Research Initiative on Mental Health and Addictions. Thank you. In indigenous, as in there are very few people in the study. It's the big dividing line here was definitely where parents were, where you were born in Canada or not, whether your parents were born in Canada or not. The diversity within that group was quite large, and the racial characteristics don't hold together in the same way in Canada. They sometimes work and they sometimes don't. But this, whether or not you're new to Canada or not, it tends to be the more important feature here. There weren't enough First Nations people in the study to know.
Michael, thank you. That was extremely interesting. I really have to verb one thing. When you say there was a composite score, did you base that off the Beck and the Six item?
In young adulthood, it was just the Beck. And in adolescence was just the Six item scale.
Okay, that's helpful.
Okay. I was just going to say, it's really nice to see you showing those age trajectories, because it's a great lead-in for the talk I'm giving, as well as other work I'm doing with adults. And what's really interesting with adults that are 20 years of age, for example, for smokers, there's huge mental health differences, but then those decline over time. So when you're 65 and older, there's almost no mental health differences, but it's all physical health differences. So these trajectories show you how these things are changing over time. And what's amazing is the mental health differences decline as you get older, and it becomes more chronic disease, physical health.
Well, Mike, thank you very much.